It's time to get up and get your day started.
Get up! Get up!
It's Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM, the first hour of Sports 56 Mornings is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Now, here are your hosts, Greg and Eli.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to Sports 56 Morning, 7 o'clock straight up. It is the Thursday, May 14th, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure, where family and fun come together. Summer right around the corner. It's time to get those backyards ready for the ultimate pool party. And boy, do they got a lot of deals on everything you need for a great pool party at Family Leisure, 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Currently 56, but it's going to warm up to about 79 today. Mostly sunny and pleasant. And the rest of the week, meaning tomorrow and then the weekend, looks fabulous with a high temperature Sunday reaching possibly 90 degrees. Right now the forecast is upper 80s for Friday and Sunday. Saturday about 84 degrees. And then we kick off the new work week on Monday with an 87 degrees, partly sunny day. Hour number one of the program is brought to you by the great folks at Old Dominic Distillery, producing Tennessee whiskey, bourbon whiskey, vodka. That's the Honeybell Citrus Vodka, Formula 10 Gin, now available in most states. It continues to grow. You can go see where they make all the great spirits at 305 South Front Street. Take a tour and have a cocktail. And especially today, you want to take advantage of it because it's Thursday and at Old Dominic Distillery, that means clocking out early and heading downtown to the Old Dominic Distillery because it's happy hour and it just hits different at Old Dominic Distillery. From 4 to 7, enjoy $7 cocktails made with their signature spirits and sip $4 local beers. Don't miss the perfect chance for a well-earned wind down. Old Dominic happy hour. You can also find out more about Old Dominic at olddominic.com. On the program today, we had a pretty wild one last night in the NBA playoffs between the Cavs and the Pistons. We will discuss that. The condolences continue to pour in about the passing of Brandon Clark. We will discuss that. We got a lot of NBA news as well as the combine continues, interviews that took place. The Grizzlies have already started working out players and will continue to do so, I'm sure, all the way up until the June draft. We also have plenty of college football news to get to. Is there going to be an impasse between what ESPN wants for the networks and maybe what the conferences minus the SEC want with a 2014 playoff? We'll discuss that on the program today. The full NFL schedule released today and the PGA Championship, the second major of the golf season, underway from just outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Kerry Miller is going to join us at 8:25 to talk all things Major League Baseball. At 9:05, the head football coach of the University of Memphis Tigers, Charles Huff, will join us. And then at 9:30, Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC. We'll take your calls and texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. I think we got a pretty good show lined up for you today, so kick back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
What a game last night, huh?
It was a fantastic game last night. The Pistons have to be kicking themselves a bit for letting that one get away, though. 9-point lead under 3 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
On your home floor in a game five, you just can't afford to let that one get away.
Nobody had won a game away from their home court in the series up until last night, and that's the Cavaliers' first road win in the playoffs this year. As you said, it was a 9-point lead for Detroit with 2:40 left in the game. Earlier, Detroit had a 15-point lead, and as you said, they let it slip away. A lot of things happened, a little controversy at the end of regulation. We'll get to that in just a second. Jay Ham, good morning.
Morning, fellas. How y'all doing?
Doing good. I'm sure you were glued to the tube watching that one.
Especially that fourth quarter in OT. You get a fourth quarter where Cleveland has James Harden and Donovan Mitchell combined for 2 for 12, and they go on that 9-0 run to force OT, and then ultimately win OT, make it a 23-10 run to close it out, and the most important win for them of the playoffs they got last night.
Yeah, as good as Harden was for most of the game, he was terrible down the stretch in overtime. You mentioned Mitchell, but James Harden had a huge rebound off a missed free throw, his missed free throw that we'll talk about here in just a second. But before the game even tipped, very classy move by the Pistons, and I'm sure the NBA had something to do with it as well, that they made sure they paid tribute to both Brandon Clark and Jason Collins before the game, and I thought that was a very precious moment. I thought it was a terrific gesture on their part. And again, we all know, of course, what Brandon Clark meant to the Grizzlies. And for those who don't know, as we talked about yesterday, Jason Collins, a trailblazer, did play a little bit for the Grizzlies, approximately 30 games. So he was a Grizzly for a while, too. So two Grizzlies honored last night before the game.
Yeah. No surprise that the NBA would do that. And it's, again, tough day yesterday. The last couple of days have been tough here for the city of Memphis especially. And that was a nice gesture last night.
Well, more on Brandon Clark, and as I said, the condolences continue to pour in. We'll do that a little bit later on, but let's talk about the game last night. The Cavs end up winning the game in overtime, 117-113, to grab a 3-2 series lead, and now Detroit's going to have to go on the road and win in Cleveland. Now, remember, in their series against the Orlando Magic, the Pistons were able to rally to win that series when they were in a 3-1 hole. Now they're in a 3-2 hole. So winning on the road and rallying is not an issue for the Pistons. But the Cavs got to feel really, really good at where they stand pulling this sucker off. Another note, the Pistons deciding to go with Paul Reed in overtime down the stretch over Jalen Duren, who again was ineffective, the former Memphis Tiger, the All-Star, played 25 minutes, had 9 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. But again, when he was on the floor, minus 16, he was being dominated by the two bigs. It's really a 2-on-1 when you think about it. It's a double dose of bigs for Cleveland that were dominant. Jarrett Allen was 6 of 10 from the field. He ends up with 16 points, 10 rebounds. Evan Mobley had a huge 3 down the stretch. He goes 19, 8, and 8. Those bigs really were difference makers. But then you throw in Mitchell early, he didn't have a huge game, but 21. Harden, 30, with 8 rebounds, 6 assists. And Max Strus, 20 points, 8 rebounds for Strus, and hitting some big threes. And that combination of those guys, 6 of them, when you look at Detroit and you go, all right, Cade Cunningham got his 39, but really they didn't get a lot, or much, I should say, from anybody else. 13 from Tobias Harris. They did get 19 from Jenkins, who played pretty well. But as I mentioned, Duren, a non-factor, wasn't in there for overtime. And Cleveland just a little bit too much firepower.
Wasn't in there for the fourth quarter.
I wasn't even sure he was in there.
He played
in the fourth.
I mean, I did.
I turned it off, turned it back on. I just knew he wasn't in there.
It's crazy to think that we are here. I mean, game five, after as good as Duren has been all year, get All-Star, everything else, that in game five of a playoff series, Paul Reed is getting all of the fourth quarter minutes and all of the overtime minutes. Like, that is, but, I mean, it's
Paul Reed had 10 points, 8 rebounds in 17 minutes.
That's just, I mean, Duren just has not been effective in the playoffs at all. And in overtime, Reed was their only guy really scoring. He had the 6 of the points, 6 of their 10 in overtime. I mean, he was good. You know, there are a lot of people that said, you know, talked about with obviously Duncan Robinson out, especially going against Cleveland, should you go, instead of putting Jenkins in the starting lineup, should they have gone with two bigs, knowing that you're facing two bigs on the other side? And maybe that makes it a little easier on Jalen Duren, whatever. But I would have never guessed that we would be at a situation where Jalen Duren literally cannot get on the court in fourth quarter of a playoff game for the Detroit Pistons.
Jay Hamm, is it more about what Dern is not doing, or do we just simply give credit to Cleveland with the double trouble there, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley?
A combination of that, and then Detroit just kind of really being exposed of their lack of personnel in that spot. I mean, they could go, like Eli mentioned, they could have gone with the two bigs, and I still think Cleveland would have had the advantage just going, you know, through the rest of the game. What they don't have is enough scoring. They're not getting it in a consistent basis. Tobias Harris has pretty much been their most consistent second scorer through this postseason run, and he's had the last couple games he's kind of fallen back a little bit, but that's what they're really being exposed of. You know, you have Cade. When Cade has to go for like 35, almost 40, it's probably a little too much for Cade. Just in terms of, not saying that he can't do it, it's just too much of a load to carry.
Yeah. Well, and without Duncan Robinson, like, he's the one guy who actually can space the floor. They don't have much shooting outside of Cade Cunningham.
Could have used Herter more than 3 minutes.
Could have, especially if he's going to make shots, but then they got to make shots.
Yeah, they don't have, they have no faith in him right now. That's the thing. Like, when you don't – so they need Harris. Tobias Harris has to hit threes if Duncan Robinson is in there. Otherwise, they have nothing. I mean, it's just – and I mean, that's like Duncan Robinson. They had the stat – I guess it was the last run series. When he scores at least 12 points in a game, they're like 40-6 or something. Like, it's like a crazy record, because if he can at least provide some spacing, then it's like – but and Cunningham certainly is – I mean, Cunningham's awesome, but he had 39. But he still has – like, the turnover there in overtime, you can't let Max Strus pick your pocket. Like, yeah. You just can't. That stuff can't happen.
They're careless with the basketball in general as a team.
They are.
A little too much for my liking. You know, it's Cade, of course, but it's the entire unit with that.
Although they only turned it over in the game 10 times. And you'll take that, whereas Detroit, make that Cleveland, had 16 turnovers. But you're right. For the most part, they do turn over the ball. Cunningham ends up having 6 of those 10 turnovers, but also he has 39 points. He has 9 assists. He has 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and doesn't have that help that you talked about. But when you look at the 3-point shooting, you take Cunningham out of the mix, who was 6 of 10, they only made 5 threes. And from their bench unit, the unlikelihood of Isaiah Stewart knocking down 2, which he did, he was the only one that hit 3s off the bench. And there's more weapons for Cleveland because they can bring in Sam Merrill. They can bring in Max Strus.
Or Dennis Schroeder.
You're right. Schroeder as well.
They haven't used him much, but they can also come with Jalen Tyson, who can give them good energy on both ends.
Yeah, Tyson, he almost got chucked out of that game, right, man. I'll tell you what.
Well, I mean, Mitchell and Harden were 4 of 18 from 3. The rest of the team was 10 of 17.
Yeah.
Like, they've got guys who can shoot the basketball.
But Harden got to the free throw line. He did a lot of great things. He added 8 rebounds, 6 assists. But he turned it over 6 times. He had some critical turnovers and missed shots down the stretch.
But he's still being aggressive like he needs to be. And that's what they needed. It's like, you can look at that in one end, but it's like he's still effective.
He has to be. You're right.
You know, he had to keep that honest.
Yeah, if he's out there and he's not being aggressive, then it's an ineffective James Harden. Doesn't help you. But James Harden, let's give him a lot of credit. Even though he missed a couple of free throws down the stretch and it didn't cost them, on the one that he missed where he got the rebound, that was a 3-point game after that miss. And for him to get the rebound, Cunningham, they say, didn't box out or went.
James stepped right into, just walked right into his rebound.
Exactly. It was a big mistake by Detroit. Now, again, think about it. You don't have Jalen Duren on the floor. You don't have Jalen Duren, who's a great rebounder. Harden gets the rebound out of all those guys. And that rebound, then he gets fouled, and he ends up, again, splitting the free throws. But that's one that, down the stretch, up nine with 2:40 to go. You can't let that slip through your fingers. And they did.
I mean, literally, all they had to do was score in the final 2.5 minutes of the game. I mean, it's a 9-0 run. I mean, you just needed to score once, they just weren't able to do it.
All right,
it puts a lot of pressure on Cade Cunningham. Like, he's, you know, he has to be that guy, especially when Harris is having an off night. Like, it's hard to find who you can count on late game situations. And they're obviously, though, that they're going to run guys at Cade Cunningham. Somebody has to be able to step up and make a shot, and they just aren't necessarily able to do that on a regular basis.
Especially now in the playoffs where points at a premium, yeah, like that, you know, and the game slowed down. Everything, it's like classic Eastern Conference basketball.
Well, right, I mean, yeah, it's if you're playing Detroit in this situation, you're like, okay, let's get the ball out of Cunningham's hand and see what happens. Like, you just, it's saved, you know, obviously the Lakers did it with SGA. Problem is, Oklahoma City has a lot of other guys who will then score on you. Detroit doesn't have a lot of other guys who can score on you.
Yeah, if they beat you with Danis Jenkins going for 28, 30, whatever the case, and Duncan Robinson having a big night, you got to live with that.
Let me read a little bit of this story, and this will lead back to the final play of regulation, which is a little bit controversial this morning, and was, of course, at the time. NBA referees are calling about 11% more personal fouls per game so far in the playoffs than they did during the regular season, a differential that's on pace to be one of the largest in NBA history. And in the league's eyes, that is to be expected. We've talked about this before. Mindful of criticism from players and coaches, NBA Senior Vice President of Referee Development and Training, Monty McCutcheon, acknowledges there is a difference between the regular season and the playoffs. But he said refereeing doesn't fundamentally change in the postseason. Well, it does, because they do call a lot of fouls, but they also let more physicality go. So I'm surprised that they're at a record pace. But on the last play of the regulation, last night, Detroit and Cleveland, there was the collision where some people believe a foul should have been called on Jared Allen. Others feel as – who was the referee? Made the call?
Tony Brothers.
That Brothers said it was incidental contact. Nobody tried to trip the other. Aaron Allen didn't try to trip. What did you think of the final play?
I picked Detroit to win the series. I'm not a fan of Tony Brothers, and I agree. Incidental contact, man. It's bang, bang, play. It's basketball. Move on.
Yeah, you can't decide the game on that. Calling a foul there. It's two guys going for a loose ball with 3 seconds to go in the game. Like, I don't see calling a foul. Now, if they call the foul, is it like this egregious, oh my gosh, he can't possibly call a foul on that play? No. I mean, like, that play will be called a foul at times, but I with 3 seconds to go in a tie game and two guys going for a loose ball, I don't believe that foul should ever be called.
So when the foul, or if you don't think it's a foul, it doesn't matter. But if you think that was a foul or could have been called a foul, you think when it happens should be a difference maker for the officials?
Yes.
Yeah. Because like Eli said, you can't decide the game on that.
No, I'm in agreement with you guys. Yeah. But you think about it, you're telling the officials to be able to make sure you realize that down the stretch – you better murder the guy before you blow your whistle. But in the second quarter, you know, let's call that a foul, even though you're calling it incidental now.
You don't have to tell the officials that. They know. Officials know that. They know. They
know.
They know
what to the show.
They know what time in the game it is. They know things. They understand.
And that's been my problem with NBA officials throughout the years. Star power call, makeup calls, phantom calls, all that kind of stuff. And we just talked about, or I talked about, the 11% increase in fouls. 11% more called. Nothing called there. But I'm in agreement with you two guys. I don't think they should have called it. Again, I just don't think it was a foul. I have no problem. I have no problem blowing a whistle with 2 seconds to go if it's an egregious foul.
If it's valid.
If it's valid.
Yeah.
That was incidental. But what makes me mad is if it is an absolute 100% foul and they don't call it, they swallow their whistles because of when it happened in the game. I don't like that. Also, we're going to find out today with the two-minute report, which, again, in of itself is the dumbest friggin' thing ever. But I hope to God we don't see that today, that report, and say a foul should have been called. Because there's nothing you can do. You can't give Detroit free throws.
I would guess that the two-minute report is going to say that a foul should have been called. I will guess that will say that there should have been a foul.
That's a problem, then. That is a problem.
This is why I never look at them. Because I don't want to get aggravated by it.
If you don't think that's going to be made a big deal by J.B. Bickerstaff and company,
you're out of your mind. He already made it a big deal.
I know, but it
ain't going to change his mind. He believes it was a foul. He doesn't care what it is.
He may have been fishing at the end. They lost. They lost a 9-point lead with 2:40 to go. He's disgruntled. But again, if we look at that and say it's incidental, then no foul should be called. So it's either you think it's incidental or not. Brothers said it was incidental. We'll see what the league says. Again, it makes no difference. It's stupid to bring up a two-minute report a day after a game five with the series tied at 2. So they'll play game 6 on Friday, tomorrow night. Cleveland leading 3-2. They'll have the home court advantage. They've already been installed as a 3.5-point favorite. No games tonight. Tomorrow also, Spurs, Timberwolves, that'll be game 6 of that series where the Spurs can close it out with a win on the road in Minnesota, and they are a 4.5-point favorite. All right, we'll take a timeout just underway. Again, our first hour sponsor, Old Dominic Distillery. Take advantage of happy hour today from 4 to 7. $7 cocktails made with signature spirits and $4 local beers. OldDominic.com, they list all their whiskeys and spirits. They list all their signature cocktails and instructions on how you can make them at home using Old Dominic spirits. Old Dominic Distillery, come for the spirits, stay for the experience. Cheers to Memphis. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Text here, Sissy's Log Cabin listener line open to you at 901-360-8255, 360-8255. You could call or text on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line. Arthur texts in, says, if it's a foul in the middle of the second quarter, should be called with time running out. Should not matter if the game ends with free throws. There should be more consistency through the game and from game to game.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree.
Mm-mm.
You don't decide the game on a call like
that. A foul is a foul is a foul, but I didn't think that was a foul. But the premise of his text is absolutely accurate. No, why should it be different?
Because you don't decide the game on a questionable call.
No, not a questionable call. I said a foul. If it's a legitimate foul, you have to blow the whistle.
I'm not calling that play a foul in the second quarter.
Right. That's my point.
Just
I don't
a response
think,
to what
I
he's
think
saying.
It was incidental. But to his overall general point with the text, absolutely 100%. If it is a legitimate foul with 1 second to go, and that's going to change the outcome of the game at the free throw line, you got to call it. You can't swallow the whistle. And we've seen times where they do swallow the whistle. We've seen times when they made the call.
Correctly, they do so.
What's that?
Correctly, they swallow the whistle.
Wow, why do you not want them to call foul if it's a real foul? If it's a
no doubt foul, yes. If there's any question at all, you don't decide the game.
We're in agreement on that. I said if it's questionable, I don't call that.
Again, I would guess that there's a decent chance today in the two-minute report they're going to say that was a foul. It still doesn't mean it should have been called in that moment. It should never be called
in that
moment.
The NBA is not doing themselves any favor by looking at that thing and saying it's a foul. They should swallow the whistle themselves on the report and say it was a judgment call, it was incidental, no foul. That's what they should say.
Even when the report comes out and they say it's a foul, I'm like, yeah, it's still not a foul to me.
Right. And again, all it does is going to the blood pressure of J.B. Bickerstaff and all the Pistons and the Pistons fans, all it's going to do is rise. That's all it's going to do. Mario's dialed in on the Sissy's Log Cabin Lister lines. Good morning, Mario.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How are you?
Man, Eli, I agree with you 100%. These two guys are playing ball. It was inadvertent. I'm glad the referee didn't call it. I would have hated to see a game end where both guys going for the ball and somebody accidentally gets tripped. And the other guy goes to the free throw line and win the game. I would have hated for a game to end like that. It wasn't a foul. I'm glad it wasn't called. And Detroit, I don't want to hear nobody complaining. You blew the lead. You choked.
Yes, they
you
did.
You choked. It's the bottom line, you choked. And one guy won this game, I'm telling you right now, Matt Strus. Every time Detroit was pulling, you think they were going to pull away.
Yep.
That dude hit a big three every time. If role players came up for Cleveland, Detroit, you choked. Have a good one.
Hey, you too.
And Strus was the one that, I mean, he picked the pocket of Cunningham and got the layup there with the after the Mitchell hit the three, and then Mitchell got the layup off of his steal as well.
And Mario, for the record, I know you said, I agree with you, Eli. We all are in agreement. We're all in agreement that that should not have been a foul, and it wasn't called. We're all in agreement that that wasn't a foul, that it was incidental. What we're saying is that we differ, is, and maybe we don't differ here. If it is a legitimate foul, an official has to blow a whistle, even if there's 1 second in the game left in the game and the game is tied, or a team can now come from one down to win it on the free throw line with two free throws. It doesn't matter to me if it's second quarter, third quarter, or the final seconds, as long as it's a legitimate foul. I think we're all in agreement on both sides here, right? I think we're in agreement.
There are fouls in the middle of the second quarter that are not fouls at the end of the game. That's my belief. There are fouls that I would 100% would say a foul is in the middle of the second quarter, that at the end of the game I would say you do not call that foul.
So that's where we differ.
I subscribe to situational fouls as well.
See, to me, it should be black and white. Here's a foul. In the rule book, this is what happened. They called a foul because of a trip or a push or a shove. Well, then it should be called in the fourth quarter as well. But when it's incidental, two guys going for the basketball, that is not a foul. And they didn't blow their whistle. That's why I'm saying the two-minute report, which is the dumbest thing ever, should not – I hope to God it doesn't say that a foul should have been called. Because, again, there's so many times when it's incidental, when both players – multiple players are going for the ball or accidentally run into each other or whatever the case may be. This wasn't a legitimate on-purpose trip by Jarrett Allen. But again, I think if it's a foul, needs to be called whenever and whatever the situation may be.
Corey texted, says, officiating NBA games is one of the most difficult professions on the planet. No question. The players are freak athletes. The game is fast. It's very challenging. One thing that's really disturbing to me is when the shot is made or missed and they want to blow the whistle after the fact.
Right.
This is all on the Pistons. They blew the game, period.
Yeah, that's, look, again, star calls, makeup calls, phantom calls. The call where, again, if the layup goes in, they don't blow the whistle. But yeah, when they see it that it doesn't go in, then they blow the whistle.
And I'm not a fan of the anticipated call.
Anticipated call, another one. So, yes, I agree. It is incredibly hard for those officials night in, night out. I get it. I understand that. Still, they're not helping themselves by having all these different scenarios of when they call a foul and who they call the foul against. Obviously, star power is a big thing in the NBA. They don't want stars to be ejected. They don't want stars to be disqualified with six fouls. They want them in the game. All right. We mentioned before they tipped yesterday, they honored both Brandon Clark and Jason Collins. Yesterday, and will continue for a long time, I'm sure, players, former teammates, fans, whoever the case may be, pouring out their hearts with condolences of the loss of Brandon Clark. We have no new information from the police investigation into his death, but like I said, a lot of people hitting social media to express their feelings, and one Jaren Jackson Jr., the former Grizzly, now with the Utah Jazz, who we know is and was extremely close with Brandon Clark. His quote, and of course he had more than just this quote to say, "I couldn't imagine a world where this was even a possibility. I truly lost my twin."
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday, I mean, Jared had to be really torn up because they were extremely, extremely close. And so I really not surprising that it probably took Jared a lot of time to digest the whole thing and before he even posted anything. And it's, I would imagine that He is really, really torn up about this.
As are a number of people that played with him and probably played against him and people within the organization. There was a, I'm not on Facebook, but I was alerted to this about this posting, and you can help me out because I know that you read it as well. And it was a gentleman who I think originally from Memphis, now living out in California. I want to say, was it Mike Scott or something Scott?
I don't know.
Okay, maybe you'll find the name. But I don't know. J-Ham, did you know what I'm talking about here? Okay. So he had a huge post that he's out there with his company. He went to the barbershop, I guess on Monday morning, and Brandon Clark was there getting his hair cut. And he was getting his hair cut, and they struck up a conversation, and blah, 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 blah. And again, this is somebody's post. I don't know if it's accurate or not. But he talked about Brandon saying he went out in California to continue rehab, felt, you know, needed to get away and all this stuff. Like, he almost painted the picture like Brandon was in a really good place, and we don't know whether he was or not. But then he went off. This guy went off on the Grizzlies organization and on Ortho South. I guess they're the ones now. It used to be Campbell Clinic. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, it looks like an outsider looking in. And we have been critical as well, not knowing really the inner workings, right? But this guy just lambasted the organization and Ortho South for the way they rehab the players. I don't know what they do, but putting more of the blame on the medical staff and that team rather than just a freakish thing when Brandon Clark came back and got hurt again. But it was scathing. And again, I'm not on Facebook, so I can't find this thing.
I wish you screenshotted it.
Yeah, I tried. I said, can you send it to me? And they said they couldn't, so I don't know.
Because yeah, you would have to have an account.
I'm not a Facebook guy, so I didn't know. But, I mean, some other people out there may know what I'm talking about. And we'll try to find that because are you on Facebook?
I'm actually actively looking for what you're talking about on Facebook
Okay. All right. Well, and I'm sure Eli is, I know he's on Facebook. Check it out. But it's there, and it was there, unless it was taken down. But it was, man. Because I don't think there's probably been people, fans, that have said things here or there. And we've questioned, not individual people. We've never brought up the company. But
well, the whole thing about trying to say it Ortho South, they had the same problems when it was Campbell Clinic. So, this isn't new to Ortho South.
I'm just
new to the Grizzlies since they switched to Ortho
South.
Right,
right. I'm just telling you what this person said. But it's also, if they're telling the truth, the more important thing is that they saw Brandon Clark, spoke to Brandon Clark, and I believe it was Monday morning, maybe Sunday morning, Monday morning, but it just happened. And he talked about how he's out there getting away, rehab, and everything was good. Because, again, which we don't want to speculate, we haven't heard anything new, that it can only be one of two things. It wasn't a crime committed. He wasn't murdered. It was either he OD'd or he committed suicide. And so this guy almost paints the picture like he was in a good mood. So it's kind of eerie to read that. Again, if it's accurate, I don't know. But that was a post, and then of course, they went in on, like I said, Ortho South. I'm not sitting here going in on them, but we have questioned some of that. Maybe it's just strictly bad luck. But for years and player after player and just the amount of injuries and how it must be tough for players to have to sit there in street clothes and watch games.
And then they have to hear it from the gallery about how they can't stay healthy. That plays.
Right. Why don't you play hurt?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it takes its toll, man.
And some would, not in Brandon Clark's case, but some would play hurt if they were allowed to by the organization. Right? The organization a lot of times says, nope, you're not going out there and you're not playing. And then, of course, you have the whole other thing with the tankathon because then it's, nah, we don't want you to play. They don't tell them. But they, you know what they're doing, right, for the tank. Speaking of the tank, it does appear that the 3-2-1 system is the system that Adam Silver would like them to ratify moving forward when it comes to the draft lottery. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he said they're still, you know, they're still tweaking some things with it, all that stuff. I think they're making way too big a deal out of this. I don't have a problem with that system that they're going with. If they're going to make some changes, it's fine by me. Whatever. What I thought was interesting is he talked about the fact that, like, literally, like, the league will have the ability to, if they believe a team is blatantly tanking, to just say, we're going to take ping pong balls away from you. Like, not even, it's not. Or, and he also said, or
so they're going to use their judgment.
He actually even said, change the draft order. Like, where they literally will just use their power, say, like, we believe you're taking. And so, even though you're supposed to have this, I guess, this many this many ping pong balls, sorry, we're going to take that away from you.
The system, the 3-2-1 system that was first reported by ESPN a couple of weeks ago, would give the three worst teams a lower percentage chance of winning the lottery than the teams picking from 4th to 10th in an effort to curb the need for clubs to be as bad as possible to increase their chances of landing a high pick. Again, in theory, it makes a lot of sense. You don't want to finish as a bottom three team. So you're trying to win more games down the stretch to be in a position of 4-10. Doesn't always work out that way. And a lot of teams have legitimate injuries where they're not going to win because they just don't have a club that they can put out there on the court that's competitive. But I do like that. Again, now you might just have a real stinky team and injuries may have plagued that team and you're going to finish bottom three and now you're going to be penalized for it. And some people have a problem with that. This is the first year since the lottery changed that the team with the worst record, the Washington Wizards in this case, got the number one pick. But again, I think it's a move in the right direction because this year was just awful. You don't think it's that big a deal? I think it was a big deal. I think it was terrible. You know what it is? It's terrible for people who have season tickets for a team that is that bad. And they're going there to watch a game and they're looking at players on the court who they don't even know who they are. And that's a shame. I mean, hey, buyer beware. I know injuries happen, legitimate injuries to great players. But when you have to start bringing in dudes that nobody's ever heard of, even though in the case of the Grizzlies, yeah, they were tanking. Yeah, there could have been a couple of players that played, but most of the injuries were legitimate. That's why they were in the position they were in. But it doesn't help the people that buy the tickets that they sit there and have to eat all those tickets for those bad games. I mean, they go, I'm sure, or give them away. Maybe they don't go to all of them. They're just fed up. But a lot of times, there's not much you could do. But in the case of some of these teams, absolutely. Losing on purpose to be in the position that they were in for this draft lottery and draft lotteries past. And now, I think that 3-2-1 system would be a lot better. Okay, speaking of the lottery, we got the draft coming up. We know the Grizzlies are picking third. The Grizzlies have already had players in. They've interviewed a bunch of players in Chicago. So here are some of the things that I picked up on the internet yesterday that has happened because this information is not released by the Grizzlies. According to Drew Hill, Amari Allen worked out for the Grizz. By the way, James Fletcher, who was on the show yesterday, in his latest mock draft, had the Grizzlies taking the Alabama guard 32nd. So he worked out. Yaxel Lendenborg said that he met with Memphis already. Braden Smith either is going to meet with the Grizzlies or met with the Grizzlies, and I forget who reported this, but they said that Braden Smith was talking to Zach Edey and told Zach to put in a good word for him. Hey, say something good about me. But the Lindenborg thing was funny because Drew Hill had this. He said, Lindenborg said, quote, I have a bad taste in my mouth from the years playing against the University of Memphis. I kind of don't like the school, but I have met with the Grizz, and we share mutual interest. We spoke about if they could draft me, that would be nice. Not a big fan of the University of Memphis.
Well, he got the last laugh. He should probably get over that. You got a championship. You don't need to worry about the University of Memphis anymore.
You do not. From the combine yesterday, they had the shooting drills. Do you guys know who the best shooter was? Of course, some didn't participate. Best shooter of all the guys that participated, Alex Caravan, UConn. 74.8% of the shots he made. Bennett Sturts, 74.6%. Christian Anderson was third. Again, Christian Anderson didn't measure the height that he was listed at. He's, 3 inches smaller than what they listed? 73.7%. He was third again. And Kingston Flemings, who is projected to be a top tenner, 72.9%.
Yeah, we talked with Jay Fletcher yesterday that Kingston Flemings, the measurements did not go his way, but the workouts, he was fabulous. He was showed how fast he was and how quick he was, which everybody knew you could watch him do that, and the fact that he had shot the ball extremely well in the shooting drills as well. So he made up for a lot of the measurement deficiencies by his performance in the drills and the other stuff. So kind of back and forth a little bit as far as Kingston Flemings was concerned.
Some of the comments that were reported that the top four draft hopefuls made included Cam Boozer. DeMichael Cole reported this, that Cam Boozer said, playing with a big next to me will maximize my game for sure. And then also Darren Peterson, all he did say was he did interview with the Grizzlies on Tuesday and it went well. I personally, I know we're up against it here. I tweeted this out yesterday and I'm feeling this more and more. I'm going to be completely wrong about this. I'm starting to think somehow, some way, Boozer's getting picked first or second. It's happening. And then the other pick would be DeBonta. And the reason I think that is because, again, if we talk about need versus best players available, well, if you think the best player available is Cam Boozer, then why wouldn't Washington grab him if they keep the number one? Remember, they have Anthony Davis now. Does Davis want to be there? And then there's Davis staying healthy. Come on, man. Come on. And so Utah, too, they would go for DeBonta. And then that would leave the Grizzlies, instead of this whole debate about Boozer and Wilson, it would be Peterson and Wilson. And I know you've already been quoted as saying, good, because you want Peterson.
I would run as fast as they would let me.
And I am concerned about Peterson. But then again, if I'm comparing it to Wilson, who had two different hand injuries, although I'm not so concerned with the hands, if they were knees or ankles or feet, then I would be. I'm a little torn on that one. I probably lean toward Peterson, but I think it's going to come down to those two. What do you think, J-Ham?
It's still a wild card. Who knows?
Who would you take out of those two, though?
Out of which two?
Out of Darren Peterson and Cam Wilson.
I would flip a coin and be happy with it, to be honest. It's great basketball players, man. I could rock with either one. Find a way to
Well, of course, but you're copping out the answer here. Come on, give me
I
one.
I mean, it's...
That's the thing. It's hard.
It's not a wrong answer.
There's not a wrong answer, you know? But they got to pick one. And
I'll take Caleb. I mean, but then I agree with Eli, with Darian. I think it's something very special there that's ready to be unlocked.
Yeah, did I say Cameron? But yeah, Wilson or Darren Peterson. I don't know. I mean, sure. If Boozer's there, I don't think there's any question in my mind that they're taking Boozer. Not just because Kleiman's a Duke guy, but obviously all the numbers point to Boozer. He had a great combine, even though they weren't playing games and he's not participating. All the awards, all that stuff. It doesn't always mean everything, but to me, I think the best player and the only, I think the one guy who I think will absolutely be a stud is DeBonta, But the other guys certainly have star power. And I think Boozer would be the best of the rest.
Take a look at what the odds right now they have as far as the top three picks of and how they have them listed odds. Here's the thing again, with Jonathan Givony, who does it for a living, talked the other day. It said, I've seen Darren Peterson and A.J. DeBonsa on a court together about 10 times. I have never thought A.J. DeBonsa was the better player.
I've had somebody say the same thing.
He's like, I've never, there's not been one time where I've thought DeBonsa was the better player than Darren Peterson. So, again, that's a guy who does it for a living. Doesn't mean he's always right by any means, but like that's a pretty glowing in a statement about Darren Peterson.
Well, you know what? Another good endorsement would be a team actually taking Peterson before DeBonsa, which I don't think will happen. So does Givony know more than the organizations that are picking? I don't think anybody out there is picking Peterson before DeBonsa.
You don't think that, but we don't know.
Well, it's my opinion. I could be wrong. I could be proven wrong. I'm just telling you, my opinion is that DeBonsa will be gone. Absolutely 100% will be gone. And I think Boozer will be gone. Now, if it's DeBonsa one, because of all the bigs that they have in Utah, now we get to need versus best player available. I can see where Utah either maybe trades down or takes Peterson there. But as far as the DeBonsa-Peterson thing, DeBonsa is going to go over Peterson. I'm 100% sure, in my opinion. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, we'll take a break. You're tuned into Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
So Bet Online, they've got A.J. DeBonsa at minus 400 to be the number one overall pick. Peterson at 3-1. Boozer at 14-1 for the number one pick.
Wow, 14-1?
For the number two pick, they've got Peterson at minus 175. Caleb Wilson at plus 425. Boozer at plus 450. And then at number three, Boozer at minus 150, Wilson plus 175 for the Grizzlies at number three. That's the current lines from Bet Online, which, again, these odds mean absolutely nothing. As DeMichael talked about yesterday, a couple years ago with Paolo Banchero, he was never the favorite to go number one.
He was the third favorite,
very end in that situation. So you never... They obviously don't know. They're just going by what everybody else is hearing and trying to set these odds. But it's that's just what the current. So if you think Boozer's going, first or second, right now you can make a whole bunch of money off of Cam Boozer going one or two.
I think it's a good play to put a little bit on there because the odds will start to drop. I think they'll start to drop. I mean, they're going to dissect these players up and down, going through their history, looking at every little crack and crevice to find anything. And if all of a sudden something comes up, look at this tweet from 2009. I mean, anything. They're looking for anything right now. And Boozer has been kind of he's like Eddie Haskell, man. I mean, I don't know if he's now, everything he says is great and it's positive and all that. I don't know if there's a little bit of mischievousness going on behind closed doors.
Though.
Huh?
You called him Haskell, though. I mean,
Eddie Haskell.
That's the ultimate flip.
I'm just saying, could there be? I don't know, because everything right now seems perfect with the guy.
Well, he's
grown up. I mean, he's
grown up in the NBA.
Yeah, like he's you know? This is his thing. Like He's been around his whole life.
Yeah. I like him. I like him a lot. That's why I think I'm telling you, it's not crazy that Washington could take him, and you're getting 14-1.
It's not crazy
right now.
At all.
All right, I'm just saying. I'm not. I'm not telling people to spend their hard-earned money on that play, but, I mean, I might throw a few dollars on there just because I think it could go that way. It could go that way. But if it doesn't, again, if it doesn't, it'll be – if he doesn't go one to Washington, he's not – I don't see him going to Utah, even though there's a lot of buzz about him in Utah. I see it maybe Washington, those two teams possibly flipping because they want the bonds. Utah wants the bonds. But then it's either coming down to, as we've talked about, Boozer Wilson, but I think it could come down to Peterson Wilson. So,
John texts in. He says, it seems like the Grizzlies are one of the most injured teams year in and year out. Is there any way to improve the conditioning and or training? Well, again, they've made a number of changes. They've gone through, I don't know how many head trainers through the years. They switched from Campbell Clinic as their provider to Ortho South as their provider. I don't like they've changed a lot of things. The results have seemingly been the same. So I don't know if it's it can just be bad luck. It can just be bad luck where you got guys that get hurt and has nothing to do with anything that you're doing. It's just bad luck.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is bad luck, to be honest with you, because I can't sit here and say, I mean, yeah, we throw it around, but we don't know what's going on behind closed doors with the medical team. But bad luck is bad. Some people don't believe in that.
And bad luck
and good luck. I do. I absolutely believe in that.
And going back to like the Chandler Parsons situation, that was the team not listening to the doctors. So you got that too. you could have that happen where they don't even listen to the people that know what they're talking about.
When you have a win seemingly in the draft lottery and people are like, "Eh, man, the luck's, you know, their bad luck is over with. Look, they're picking three." Well, first of all, they got to be able to pick the right guy and you hope that guy stays healthy. And then 24 hours later, Brandon Clark's dead. I mean, don't tell me about like luck. I'm a big believer in bad luck and good luck. I still think you need the witch doctor over there, whatever, man. Sage, whatever it takes, man, over at FedEx Forum. Steven Yeager is your early leader at the PGA Championship, golf's second major. It's at Aronimink or just outside of Philadelphia. He is 3-under through 5. Harry Hall, the Englishman, 2-under. Michael Brennan's 2-under par as well. Cameron Smith, a Cameron Smith sighting. He's 2-under, and then a whole host of players at 1-under, including young Alex Fitzpatrick, Matt Fitzpatrick's brother, who has already made a name for himself on the PGA Tour. A lot of rain last night, they said, overnight. Nearly a half an inch of rain, so they probably had to do a lot of work during the overnight hours into the wee hours before sunlight, but they're playing. I'm not sure if that means the greens are more receptive and scoring is going to be better today, but they did have a lot of rain last night.
It doesn't it looks a little chilly. A lot of long sleeves and jackets. It's cloudy. I'm not sure exactly what the temperature is, but looks a little chilly there right now.
Philly can get that way in May. May's a weird month. Most of the time it's warm, but you can have the chilly days, especially the chilly mornings. One high school football note before I forget, from our buddy John Varlis, who will join us tomorrow. Gene Robinson replaced at Germantown High School by Deron Sutton, who was the Ridgeway coach and had been the Ridgeway Roadrunners coach since 2020. It is Deron Sutton taking over the Germantown football program, according to our friend John Varlis. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.